I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
Welcome to another episode of The Gary Hour. I'm your host, Gary Levitt. This week, I talk to comedian and actor Todd Montesi about his tumultuous upbringing, absentee parents, growing up in Brooklyn, and finding a dead body, and comedy, and turning that trauma into art. Is it possible? We'll see. This episode is brought to you by Future Moments, makers of mobile apps for content creation. If you're a filmmaker, or if you just make videos, if you're a podcaster, a musician, search for Future Moments on the App Store because they have an app that's pretty cool that will make your life easier. All right, thanks for listening. Check out the show notes. There's links in there with all kinds of goodies, and I hope you enjoy. Cool. So I think I saw you at a show, and then I saw you on my television.
Oh yeah,
on HBO.
Oh, that's nice.
Pete Holmes show.
Yeah, I'm still half homeless, so it's cool.
Yeah. How did you end up on? You're on Crashing on HBO.
Yeah, just the first episode, the pilot. Basically, Pete. I knew Pete when he started in New York City back in the day, and I guess like. He reached out to me because he wanted to recreate like his beginnings in New York City.
Yeah.
So like he has done one of my shows. I've been doing comedy. I've been doing stand-up comedy since I was 17 and I'm 37 now. So actually my 20-year anniversary in comedy is coming up around this time, like late August, early September.
Wow.
So yeah, I've been around a while. But yeah, it was pretty cool. It was probably like the best professional gig I've ever had in my life since... You know, it was like, oh, working with Judd Apatow.
Yeah.
You know, like there was a thing that happened too where I had like a handler and she was like, oh yeah, so go get food, right? And there's a food truck for like union people, non-union people,
right.
Or people that are like in and not in, you know?
Yeah, and SAG.
Yeah. So I went there and I'm just, you know, I'm just like a normal person. I'm like, I don't know. So I go.
You're not in SAG.
No, I'm SAG eligible because of that.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. So I could, but I'm broke. So, you know, and that. If I get something like a role or something, then obviously I'll hustle to get money somehow, hit a bank or, you know, jewel thief, something to fucking pay off to do it. So, yeah. So I went to the crafts table. Yeah. No, they had a truck, the food truck.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, so the guy goes, what do you want? And I go, I don't know. An egg sandwich? I don't know. He goes, all right. So extras are over there. And then my handler comes and goes, no. He's part of the crew. He's part of the cast, main cast. You do what he wants.
Nice.
That was great. And I was like, wow, there you go.
Taste of the high life.
Yeah. You shut yourself up, you minion, and make my egg sandwich. Now, chop, chop.
So you got a free egg sandwich out of the roll.
Yeah, I think I had more than that. I think I had mushrooms in it and like, you know, a little sausage. Yeah, I had it was a good sandwich. It was a good.
Yeah.
Yeah, it had all the stuffs in it. You
got to take advantage of that when it's happening.
The works. It had the works. Yeah.
The works. Give me the works.
Give me the works.
So how did Pete Holmes reach out to you? How does that happen?
I think, all right, so I had this bum, like, manager I was freelancing with who'd send me, like, literally, like, one a roll a year.
Uh-huh.
And then he calls me up. He goes, hey, Todd, so you won't believe this. HBO's calling. And I thought he was just joking or something.
Yeah.
I'm like, what? So he goes, yeah. Let me know what you want to see if you're interested. So he sends me a thing, and I'm like, wait one second. Oh, okay, because I heard about the crashing Pete Holmes thing. I'm like, oh, that's interesting.
Mm-hmm.
And then, like, I was kind of worried because I was thinking, like, yeah, is he going to make fun of me? Because, like, the role was open micer, and, like, am I going to, you know.
Right.
Because, you know.
Is he going to portray you in, like, a crappy way where you're just a scrub or something?
Yeah. And you know how it is when you're a comic. You're always in your head, like, you know, doubt versus, like, go for it and that thing.
But, you know, but it's smart because you do want to protect your image in a way.
Yeah. But then I was talking to some comics. And they're like, dude, you got to do it, like, no matter what. Even if it makes you look stupid.
Right.
That's still a good cred, you know. So I did it, and, like, the cool thing was, like, it was a cool set. Like, Apatow was really cool. Basically, they were like, yeah, just do. They had like a script, but of like material. But then it was just like a hold.
Mm-hmm.
So basically, I just had to do my own material and just like.
So you got to do your material on HBO.
Yeah. That's technically I did stand up on HBO. You know, look how great I'm doing now. I'm doing your podcast. It's great.
That was your HBO special.
Yeah, 15 seconds. That's all I needed.
That's more than a lot of comics, though.
Yeah. You know what? I still did the stand up for NBC line recently because
you did.
You know, I had nothing going on. I'm not drinking this month, and I thought, you know what? Let me go for it. Focus mm-hmm. for August, and you know, and of course, you know, I shouldn't have. But I did because, you know, I'm still a needy fuck up person comic.
Yeah, why rule out?
Yeah. You think, oh yeah, but you know. But also I feel like I'm all a little bit too weird for that. Like, you know.
Too weird for NBC?
I think too weird for the mainstream, you know? Like I think I could fit in. It's just that I'm not easily to cookie cutter to put in like a show immediately, you know?
Right.
Like I feel like I'm my own brand of humor.
Yeah.
Like, for example, like a Sacha Baron Cohen, if you see him, you're not going to be like, oh, put him in Friends.
Right.
You can't do that. You got to put him in his own thing. And
right.
I feel like now today, they don't really trust, they're too scared to give comedic voices their own thing,
mm-hmm.
which I feel like that's why it's a lot of crap in right now on TV where it's all bloated. And they say like it's peak TV, but all these other shows sound the same to me, you know?
But you know what you could play mm-hmm. is The Wacky Neighbor.
I'd like to, you know, I'd like to. I'm very wacky. I'm sweating. I'm schwitzing on your couch. That's a very wacky neighbor thing to do.
And listen to that voice, agents. Listen
exactly.
to that voice.
He sounds Jewish and he's black. Come on.
And if you pronounce your name Montesi, you could be Italian.
Yeah. I mean, I hit so many ticks and tags for like diversity. And then, you know, but I feel like I'm just, you know, a little too rough around the edges for them, you know? So,
mm-hmm.
but I like to do my own things. It forces me to like produce and create my own content and pushing my own content, you know? And I think that helps out too, you know?
Yeah. But you wouldn't turn down a role.
I would take it. Yes. I would be like, hey, how's it going, guys?
Yeah.
Clapter. All right, guys, I got to whoop. There it is.
Wacky neighbor storms through the door.
Yeah. Oh, I'd love that. Yeah. I'd take it. Fuck it. You know, cursor.
Oh yeah.
Oh, sure. Cool.
Just for fun or like in context?
Or whatever, you know. I don't know if it's like I don't know what's the demographics of this podcast, you know.
It might be children under 12.
Exactly. This is actually comedy for babies, so they listen in the womb. It's great.
So you got to be on set and watch Judd Apatow direct, huh?
Yeah.
Did you pick anything up?
He's pretty laid back, you know, which is cool. I think that like keeps a cool, you know, because I don't know, like I haven't really worked that much in mm-hmm. like sets, except for my own sets.
Yeah, you directed a bunch of stuff.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But I've noticed that he's pretty laid back, pretty chill. You know, it's so weird because I wanted to like afterwards hit him up and be like, hey, here's my card. But like I wanted to play cool. Like I've done this before. It's cool.
Right.
So I don't know if that was the wrong thing to do, because like I wanted, like, you know how it is, right? You want to like, you know, stay in the radar, but.
Yeah, you want to be proactive, but you want to maintain tact.
Yeah.
There's a line somewhere.
Yeah.
And then, but the problem is that once you start thinking about how to do it,
mm-hmm.
you know it's going to be awkward and you'll lose the tact.
Yeah, so I didn't. Yeah, I was just tacked. I was like, yeah, thanks, and like, mm-hmm. appreciate it, and you know, but you know, hopefully he'll remember me one day and be like, oh yeah, you know. But I only did that one episode, so that's about it.
Maybe if you pickpocketed him or something, yeah. You know, be like, oh, did you drop your wallet?
Yeah, yeah.
Then he trusts you.
Dude, scumbag. Oh, yeah, that's great. Scumbaggy comics make it now. That's it. Yeah, I feel like I'm not as scumbaggy enough. Not, you know, not enough horrible things in my past.
Well, that's easy to obtain.
Is it? I don't know. I've got too many, like, you know, I've had so many traumas. I feel like doing traumas on others, like, I have empathy.
But that's what you're supposed to do. If mm-hmm. if you're trauma inflicted, you're supposed to pass it on.
Yeah, yeah. No one taught me that, you know? They only taught me to keep the trauma inside. And burn it inside me and destroy myself.
Yeah, no. How else are you going to get it out? You got to pass it on. If you were beaten, you got to beat your kids. That's how you get it out.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Good thing. I'll probably not have kids. No, I probably wouldn't beat kids. I wouldn't do that.
You wouldn't?
No. Why? Yeah, I'd probably be a good. Ironically, I'd probably be a good dad probably because I'd be like, you know, yeah, go with the flow, you know. Yeah. But I'm not really like I'm not an abuser. No, that's not cool.
Well, were you abused? Is that?
I had like a crackhead schizophrenic like relative, and like it was just messed up, you know.
What, like an uncle?
Yeah, I mean, like actually, technically, it's supposed to be my dad, but he was never my dad, you know, because he's such a fuck up. I was raised by my grandparents. Yeah,
you were raised by your grandparents.
Yeah. My grandmother mostly. Yeah.
So that was your biological dad.
Yeah, I guess so, but it wasn't like that, you know.
Was he in your life?
I mean, he would live with us, but he was a schizophrenic. Mm-hmm. So it's just like, it was just, you know.
So schizophrenic, like multiple personalities?
Or? Yeah, like clinical, like he went to mental institutions and stuff. Uh-huh. Yeah. And also he was from the army and stuff and like all that stuff.
Was the schizophrenia from being in the army?
I don't know. I think it's genetic probably.
Mm.
So.
Do you think you got any of that?
Well, I hope not. I don't know. I mean, I try to control myself, you know, and I have a weird feeling because my family is pretty crazy that maybe I'm the one that's not.
Yeah.
And then, but if I did have kids, they're probably going to be super fucking nuts. So that's what scares me about like, you know, cause right. I'm very much into control and like, you know, like I'm never
staying in control.
Yeah. Yeah. Even if I get fucked up and like, I always get drunk and stuff.
Yeah.
There's still a limit where I'm just like, all right, let me just stop.
You never lose touch with that inner voice.
Well, I do lose, like I'll black out, but like, I'll still, you know, maintain not, you know, over the edge or not, you know, losing any teeth or anything.
But your voice will be like, oh, you're blacking out.
Yeah.
Time to reel it in.
Yeah. Or if I am blacking out, it's like, all right, I got this. And then I end up magically home, you know?
So you have like a strong inner voice.
I guess. I don't know. I don't know if that inner, yeah, I think a nagging, neurotic voice probably.
Yeah. That doesn't want to lose control.
Yeah. I think, I guess. Cause then people be like, see, you're a loser just like us. Yeah.
Right. Well, that's good. Cause some people have an inner voice that tells them to destroy themselves.
Oh, I'm sure there's that too, though. But I think my inner voice is just like, you know what? Get something first, then destroy yourself. Yeah. So then everyone feels sorry.
Right.
For not, you know, cause no one gives a shit if you destroy yourself when you have nothing and you're not, you know.
Totally.
Yeah. But if you're on top of the world, if you're Kurt Cobain.
Then you can make the comeback.
Yeah.
Except Kurt Cobain can't.
Yeah, well, you know, but now he's like, you know, he's forever on t-shirts of like kids forever. So there you go.
I'm not sure that helps him.
Yeah. I mean, we're all going to die, right? So, you know, why not? At least you'll live on through, you know.
A t-shirt.
Yeah, exactly.
So was your mom?
I didn't have a mom, yeah.
You didn't have one?
Yeah, like, I saw her a couple
Immaculate
times.
Immaculate Conception?
I hope so. I don't know. I saw her maybe a couple times and she was like, bitch. So,
really? Yeah. What happened? She gave birth to you?
Yeah. I don't know that much about her. I don't know.
But you know, so you were raised by your grandparents. Like,
yeah.
Was that her parents?
No. That was his parents.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. I haven't really expressed, I'm still like trying to deal with that. Like, I haven't really expressed that or mm-hmm. talked about it, but now I'm just like at the point where I'm like, you know, because I want to make something out of that.
Yeah.
So I'm like, and I'm thinking in my head how to like produce a project about that and how like comedians like, because there's a lot of shows about doing comedy, but like, where does it come from and why do you need that? So it's good that I'm actually like talking about it out there and outside, you know?
Yeah, because that's...
Not using it as therapy, but like using it, I want to use this in my art and stuff and like, you know, representing that shit, you know?
Yeah, because there could be a lot of stuff there to mine.
Yeah. So it's good that I'm actually, going forward with it and like, you know. But like, honestly, it's still weird the term like dad and mom and father. It's like these people just breed you.
Right.
That doesn't make them like, oh, mom and dad, you know?
Well, that's a good question. What makes a mother or a father?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Like literally I met her like a couple times, and it also, it's kind of a weird, cause like she's kind of a pariah in like my grandmother's eyes, you know? Cause she, I don't know, I guess like, she, yeah, it's weird, you know, like there's things like, oh, it's your fault, his fault, whatever. And they weren't really like together, you know? Uh-huh. And I always saw her like maybe a couple times. And when I saw her, it was just like, oh, here's some like Haagen-Dazs. And then she'd be like, oh, can I borrow money for, you know, cause I just paid him for Haagen-Dazs, you know?
Right. Some sort of manipulation.
Yeah. 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 Like, oh, hey, I'm a good person. We're like, but you never raised me. And like, who are you? So I remember when I was like 10 years old, I actually confronted that, like, you're supposed to be my mother, but I'm only seeing you like, what, this is like the second time?
You confronted her.
Yeah, yeah. And I was like 10 or something. And like, and then she smacked me. And I was like, you know what? I never want to see you again. And I never saw her again.
You never, since you were 10?
Yeah, yeah.
How would she, does she know where you are?
I don't care. I don't know. I don't know where she is. She's probably dead. I don't give a fuck.
You don't care?
Yeah, yeah.
Did you ever get to know her?
No. No, I've just seen only a couple times, like two or three times in my life.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Was she an addict of some sort?
I don't know. I don't know. I think I've heard she was like a go-go dancer or a stripper or something. I don't know. Yeah.
But you know her full, you could find her if you wanted to.
Not really. I have, you know what a weird thing is? Like I have a half sister who's Puerto Rican that that's, I'm kind of interested in seeing in who she, but like.
So it's your mom's.
That's no, that's a different woman.
A different woman, same dad.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. Or same like, you know, paternal, you know.
Sperm donor.
Sperm donor, right, right.
So she comes back into your life. So she must have been in touch with your dad's parents who raised you.
That, no, this is like, again, this is like, I haven't seen her. It had been cut off for like, since I was 10, I'm 37. So that's like maybe, what?
It's about 27
years. Yeah.
Yeah. That's longer than you've been doing comedy.
Right.
So, but she must have parents that were curious about, cause that's, you're their grandkid.
Who?
Your mom.
I don't know. I don't know that. I know that she's Jamaican. That was the Jamaican side of me.
Okay.
But I don't know. And that's another thing, because I was raised by the Haitian side.
Okay.
Haitians and Jamaicans hate each other.
Really?
So, yeah, it's like, you know, Caribbean, I don't know, colonialism, Caribbean, you know.
Yeah.
You know, everyone eats each other, you know, like Dominicans and like Puerto Ricans hate each other.
Yeah.
There's rivalries within like.
Within small countries.
Yo, yeah, within like minorities. It's great because, you know, you want to be the get in and be a part of the fabric of the winners.
Yeah, there's definitely a lot of tribalism in the small and macro, micro.
Mm-hmm.
It's ridiculous.
It's everywhere, you know, Israel and Palestine and all that stuff. Everyone hates each other.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Even in Spain, which is a small country, the Basque region hates the other people. The people in Madrid hate the Barcelona, the Catalan. That's ridiculous.
Spanish civil wars and stuff. Yeah. I have actually some relatives from Spain, from like my aunts who married. Yeah.
Are you in touch with them?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Like, I know, like, the Haitian part mostly, yeah.
So you're, like, seriously American because you're just a melting pot.
Oh, yeah, melting pot of screw-ups, yeah, basically.
You basically, your genetics are just, like, all the screw-ups from all over the world?
Basically, you know, I think someone, like, I have my aunt who, like, researched the French part because she was smart. She went to Columbia and stuff and, like, I think taught there.
Who, your aunt?
Yeah, I have an aunt, yeah.
Who is that, your dad's sister?
Yeah, basically, all right. I was raised by the Haitian side of my family.
Yeah.
The father, I guess, this side, because he was Haitian. And yeah, and my grand, yeah. So that was where I was raised.
Okay.
Yeah. And they're kind of like interesting people because like my grandmother had money in Haiti and had like clout, but then the Haitian revolution happened. Mm. Not a revolution, the Haitian.
Earthquake?
No. This was happening in the 50s when the dictatorship happened.
Okay.
And then her mother had land. Her mother like had influence and stuff. And the dictatorship happened and then they lost everything. Wow. And then you had to get out.
Mm-hmm.
And it became really fucked up. And then she moved here and she had to start all over. And basically, I think she worked for maybe, I think the UN or something as like a secretary.
Okay.
And then she lost that job and ended up being working as a cafeteria lady, which really made her bitter.
I'll bet.
Yeah, yeah. And then, you know.
She's kind of royalty in Haiti.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah. She was a big shot. I think she like lied about her age to become a mayor of her neighborhood.
Mm-hmm.
Like when she was like 15, you're supposed to be 18 or something.
Yeah. Well, so, you hear about that. People being doctors in their hometown, homeland and coming here. And
it's like, yeah. And then everything sucks. And you're like, what's the point? Sucks. Everything sucks. Life is meaningless.
So you
pray to Jesus. Only Jesus is the way.
So you probably have relatives in Haiti.
Yeah.
Have you reached out at all?
No. I know they've reached out for money and stuff to her, but I think they're all dying out because they're old.
Yeah.
Not funny, but you know, it is.
That happens.
Yeah.
So you have some intellectuals in your Haitian side then.
Oh, yeah. I mean, like, even today, my grandmother's still very into politics and stuff. And, mm-hmm. like, you know, here, like, it's kind of funny. She's really pro-Hillary, mm-hmm. even though Hillary, with the whole Haitian thing that happened over there and, like, you know.
Oh, there's something with the Clinton Foundation tried to help Haiti, but ended up messing
it
up.
Yeah. But she's a diehard Democrat and stuff, and most, you know. And my aunt, too, she's really smart. She lucked out, the oldest aunt, like she, when shit hit the fan, my grandmother took her money and sent her to like, to go to school in France.
Nice.
For like, I think she went to somewhere Plassey. I think, I don't know, to Sorbonne or something, but one of those like good, like schools over there.
Yeah.
And then she became like really cultured and like, you know, she's very cultured. And then she married like, this dude who's in Spain, who's a Spaniard. And he's like a doctor and stuff. And so they had, you know, they were like the cool American success story in the family, right. Even though they all divorced and stuff, you know, which is funny. Yeah.
So do you feel like when you think about these people, do you feel like they're a part of you? Are they part of your identity?
I mean, I feel like all these weird stories are part of my identity, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I'm kind of like, I still have like issues and stuff. Like, it's still frustrating because like, I can't really trust people. Cause like of the abandonment issues and stuff. And like, mm-hmm. you know, even with my grandmother, like, I feel like there's a level of like, I'm the black sheep of the family because I'm not full member. Like I'm like half Haitian and like, you know what? There's not enough water signs in my family. You know, everyone's a Virgo or like, you know, they don't get me. They don't get my creative side. Yeah.
But Virgos are good caretakers.
Oh, they are. Oh no.
So your dad is Puerto Rican?
No, he's Haitian.
Oh, your dad's...
Yeah, can we not call him a dad? Like, it was just like...
Yeah, I don't know what to call him.
You got to know. Just like, I don't know.
How do you refer to him? What's the pronoun?
I don't know. Like, I used to say a lot, like, oh, I had a crackhead uncle and stuff. But, like, it was like, you know...
Him.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Just to, like, remove it from me, because I don't want to have, you know... It's still tough for me to, like, accept, you know? Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, because there's a little bit where, like, I hate him so much, and then, like, I hate the other person, that lady that had... left me too. It's just like, I'm like, oh, I'm like a product of that. Like, you know, I mean, what's the point? Why am I here? You know?
Maybe that's not for them to decide.
Yeah. But I've had a lot of problems with that growing up and stuff. Like I did try to, before I did stand up, I did attempt suicide.
Mm-hmm.
So
what, 15?
16. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So, and then, but then,
but that's pretty common. I mean, it's not like it's not like out of the ordinary.
Yeah, but I mean, like I mean, I feel like I really had legit like, because I was always smart, you know, and mm-hmm. like you see all these things that happen to you, and you're just like, I don't get it. Like, one thing is you tell me to pray to God, but then all these things happen,
right?
And I'm not like, it's not like I'm a bad guy. So what is this? Like, was I punished from a past life? That makes no sense,
right?
Because like, you know, there's no proof of that.
Yeah,
and then you just analyze, and then you go. Yeah, and then people are really stupid, and like life is kind of like, I mean, there's a point where in life where you need some type of like advantage, you know? And it's hard, you know? I feel like the only advantage I've had is maybe like growing up in New York and like actually knowing and understanding quickly what's all about, you know? But still, it's still tough, you know?
It is.
Yeah.
But also, growing up in the United States in general is already an advantage as far as the rest of the world.
Yeah, I mean, you know, for some, though, but there's still, like, people living in, like, the second world, mm-hmm. you know?
Yeah.
I mean, it's the first world, the third, I mean, you know, I mean, there's still, I feel like I'm still living in the second world. I'm still, like, broke and, like, you know.
But you have a home.
Barely. I mean, it's like, you know.
What do you mean, barely?
I don't know. I feel like, basically, I've always felt like I'm half homeless, though, you know? And, like, also, I mean, right now, I'm still living with my grandmother because, like, you know, because I... It's kind of weird. Comedy's become like my modus operandi, my religion almost, where it's like, I want to use this to like validate why I'm here. Mm-hmm. And I want to maybe share like that maybe there is more to it than like what you get, you know?
Yeah.
But sometimes I'm just like, is it? Cause I'm busting my ass. I'm doing all those things. And then like, you just get, no one cares, you know?
Well, you that happened. That's such a New York City thing because we're just surrounded by the best of the best.
They say that, but there's a lot of mediocrity. We're surrounded by a lot of rich people and a lot of poor people who are trying to become rich people.
Well, we're surrounded by a lot of people.
Mm-hmm.
And it takes kind of a badass to move to New York.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you go to, if you start doing comedy in Idaho or any.
Oh, I get jealous of that because they could basically work out and get like an hour in front of real people.
Yeah.
Where when I started doing stand up, I had to go to open mics and then deal with like these fucking jaded motherfuckers. And then you ended up doing like hard jokes and like doing like rape jokes just to like shock the room and wake them up.
Right.
And then all of a sudden you get like a reputation like, oh, this guy, he's a 17-year-old who does rape jokes.
Uh-huh.
It's like, no, I'm just trying to see like. How to develop. I'm still trying to develop. It's like when you start doing stand-up in New York, like when you're born and raised, it's harder because like you're already part of the competition. Like you already, yeah, people from Idaho doing these open, like having hour sets, like regularly coming to New York and already they're doing your open mics just like you. And they're looking at you like, fuck you. You're 17. You got the whole world in your hands. I'm like 28, 30.
Yeah.
And I need to do it now, you know?
Yeah.
So it's kind of like, you know.
And but that's tricky too because they've had a lot of stage time, but they haven't had the, you know, like the good quality around them a lot of times.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
The bar hasn't been raised around them.
Yeah, 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 I guess. But they're still, like I like a couple days ago, I did a road gig in New Hope, Pennsylvania. It just felt so refreshing just to do like I did like 30 minutes in my sleep.
Yeah.
And it was just like a material and it was just like, wow. And they were like, wow, you're so good. I was so great. And I'm like, this feels good. Like I want to get into stand-up to like travel the world, travel the world, yeah. See America and stuff. And like, it's kind of weird because I've been doing it for 20 years. And I'm like, am I starting to do that just now? Like, I feel like sometimes I get left back.
Yeah.
Because I've seen so, and I've helped so many people.
Yeah.
Like, you know the Grizzly Pear, right?
Oh, yeah.
I started comedies over there.
You did? They didn't have a comedy before that.
No, they did. It was the Village Ma.
Mm-hmm.
And they had like maybe a mic like once in a while. And then I did a Sunday show there. Yeah. And then a comic named Sal Froyo came in there and like kind of took the room for me and turned to Sal's Comedy Hall.
Right.
And I had to sit with Ava from the Cellar, who owns the Cellar.
Yeah.
And we had to sit down and I was like, listen, because there was a beef because they were like, wait, you can't have two comedy clubs.
So close.
Yeah, yeah. Because you had Boston Comedy Club.
Yeah.
Then the Lantern was coming up.
Mm-hmm.
And then you had that.
And this is all in the West Village around.
Yeah. And remember, this is before like the Cellar became like the big rockin'. It had always been like a prestige club.
Yeah.
But now it's like a celebrity club where everyone, they have long lines. This was before like Louis.
Right.
You know, and all that stuff where it became like the club, you know, the hip rock and roll club.
I mean, if you've been doing stand up in New York for 20 years, you've seen and probably shared the stage with so many famous people at this point.
I guess so, yeah. I mean, you know, it depends. I mean, or like people who've like climbed up and become big and you're just like, all right.
How does that affect you? Does that?
I get nightmares of like, I still get nightmares of like me still in high school and not graduating.
Uh-huh.
I think that manifests from that, you know?
Does it feel like that?
Oh, always. Yeah. I feel like I know I have like a developed sense of humor and stuff and a unique sense of humor, but also I feel like it's a lot to invest in. Not a lot. It's more to invest in than others, you know, where others have like a package they could easily to fit in to like a role right now. Like, all right, we need like a non-threatening black guy, you know, who could be like, you know, the cool guy, you know,
right.
I'm not that cool. You know, there's a dorky part of me.
Yeah.
Also, there's also like maybe like an edge to me, obviously.
Yeah.
And like, I feel like they'd be like, yeah, a little too rough around the edges, which I think would be okay. But
let me ask you, why do you think Pete, you came up with Pete Holmes, right? You started, well, he started after you or around?
No, he started in, I think, Chicago.
Right.
And Pete then came he came, yeah, yeah.
He already had some heat when he got here?
I guess, yeah, yeah. I mean, yeah, I think it was like maybe 2 or 3 years in Chicago and then came
okay,
here.
Okay, so not that much.
Mm-hmm.
So why do you think he got famous, so like crazy famous?
I think he hits the mark. So he's from middle Midwest. He's got the Midwest look, classic Midwest look.
Right.
Kind of looks like John Ritter, you know? Yeah, and his humor. I think his humor fits that, like, it fits for the country, you know?
It's an easy to put, and you're like, oh, this is, you could give an elevator pitch to him.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, that's him.
Yeah, yeah.
So what's your elevator pitch?
You know, my elevator pitch is like a real New Yorker.
Right.
He's universal and like, he'll, you know, We'll tell it like it is. I don't know. I think my elevator pitch is like, you get what you get. You know what I'm saying? A real New York City vibe that's universal and not like, oh, we're just a bunch of hipsters trying to become the next Felicity. It's like, no, this is a real New Yorker, a real New York voice. I'm really trying to fucking better myself despite all the bullshit.
Yeah.
A real person. And I feel like people get it. It's not just New Yorkers. People around, like people from different, I connect with people like in different, I could connect with people who are conservative.
Yeah.
I got complete opposites to me.
Yeah.
I could probably, you know, connect with some racists who hate blacks or something, you know, I don't know. I mean, it's part of me that hates that sometimes, too, but I'm kidding.
But
I feel like and that's what I want to try to do and strive with my projects. I want to talk about, like, you know, like, well, that's what's so great about, like, 1970s shows, like, All in the Family.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, it's just, like, you could relate to that, you know, even if it's like he's repugnant, Archie Bunker.
Yeah.
You could relate to his like neuroses and his fears of like the other, you know?
Yeah. And you're laughing at him and also with him.
Yeah. 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 Cause we all have that. We all have like that, you know,
but as getting back to the branding thing, cause as stand-up comedians, that's kind of
very important.
It is. Cause you get up in front of people and they're evaluating you within 30 seconds. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of like up to us to provide a very simplistic example of what we are.
Yeah, I do that too. And it's just annoying because like, I want to move on and move forward and really do material, you know?
Right. Well, that's why it's such a tricky art form because Pete Holmes gets up there, for example, and you're like, oh, innocent Midwestern guy. He looks like a youth pastor. Mm-hmm. So you know exactly
the story,
right away.
Right.
Yeah. He's able to sell that brand pretty easily and quickly. Yeah. It's very well defined.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's, as stand-up comics, that's our challenge.
Right.
And that's why I'm asking, what's yours?
I think my brand is just like the New York City kid that's like everyone knows. Like, you know, that type of, you know, hustling, you know, doing what he can to survive. And also like he'll drink with you and like, you know, hang out with you and like listen to your stories and like, you know.
Yeah.
All that stuff. I guess like the
you got the eye ring.
Yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I guess that might be it. Maybe that's like stopping me like eye ring. I don't know if that's good for NBC. God, I can't be like Cosby. I'm kidding.
Well, then there's like someone like Ron Funches, who's not that different from you if you simplify it.
But he's more cuddly though.
Ah.
Yeah. Right.
You're cuddly.
Yeah, but there's an edge to me, man. Like, you know, I'm like, you know, I'm not going to... That's another thing, too. Being a native New Yorker, I'm not going to kiss ass. I can't like, oh, wow, I'd like to hang out at your show and, like, shake my head and go, hey. I'm like, fuck that, dude.
Uh-huh.
I grew up with so many fucked ups. I mean, I'm not going to kiss your ass. Well, you grew up in Brooklyn?
Yeah.
Like, 90s Brooklyn, where you get, like, you know... Like, I have a story how I got jumped by, a diverse gang when I was a kid. I got robbed.
You did?
Yeah, like a multicultural gang. Yeah. Uh-huh. And basically, it was led by an Asian kid, which, you know, because we were woke, you know.
Uh-huh, yeah.
And they robbed me of like.
So the Asian kid drop kicked you, the Jew stole your money.
Exactly. Is that what you're saying? No, they just took my bus pass because I had like a bus pass because of school. And I was a fat kid, so I had to walk like 2 miles or 3 miles home. And I was just so like, they tried to kill me. I got to walk all the way home. They robbed me with like a butter knife too, not even a real knife. It was just like pathetic.
And you gave them your money?
No, I didn't have money. They just took my bus pass.
Oh,
I was
broke.
I've been mostly poor most of my life.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
So being raised by Haitians, what do they think?
That already sounds fucking like sad. Like worse than wolves. Is raised by Haitians. had no mother. Of course I didn't. Haitians.
What do they think of stand-up comedy? It's probably pretty foreign to them, right?
No. I mean, like, my aunts, they get it. Because, like, they're like, I think they're 50s, so they get it. They're like, you know.
A little more hip.
Not hip, but, like, more like, you know, baby boomers, I guess. Where my grandma, like, the funny part was when I used to watch comedies as a kid, she'd hate that. She'd be like, why are you watching Jerry Lewis? So stupid. Why are you trying to make people laugh? You know?
What kind of monster says that?
No, because he grew up miserable. Like, Haiti was, like, miserable. You know, there's, like, these fucking people.
Yeah.
Like, the Tonton Macoutes were, like, these monsters that were just, like, killing people in the streets.
Right.
And you grew up with massacres and, like...
Comedy's a luxury.
Yeah, exactly. 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 That's just so sad. And, like, I feel like, you know... You know, it's like, you know, the only thing she did like was, I guess, music she enjoyed. Like, she enjoyed, like, But she enjoyed. There's this guy named Miguel Achevez Maria, which is like a Mexican, like he's a Rancheria.
Okay.
Which, if you don't know, they're like, it's Mexican revenge music. Okay. So basically it was just like, you know,
it's like the Bob Marley of Mexico.
No, but he's like the revenge music though. So he played like, you know, like, I will kill all my enemies. Dun, 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 dun. It's like, ah, this is beautiful music.
Right, right, right.
But he was great. Yeah, yeah.
But he's burning and looting while he's
out. Exactly. I will destroy all my enemies with my amigos. Dun, 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 dun. My heart.
Yes. So, raised in Brooklyn by Haitians.
Yeah. Right. By my grandmother. Yeah. My Haitian grandmother. My grandfather was kind of like aloof, but that's, you know,
was he in the house?
Yeah. Yeah. But he was way older than my grandma. He was like, maybe 20 years older.
Oh wow.
And they never, I don't think they liked each other at all. Mm. Yeah.
But they were married.
That's what happened. You just stayed. You was like, oh, well, you know, this is it. You know, well, but the funny thing was, I think he was married before, 'cause he was like an agrarian.
An agrarian
in Haiti, yeah, yeah. Because like,
what's an agrarian?
I think like a not a farmer, but like a farmer who knew about the land and how to like till the land and stuff.
Okay.
So I think he worked for like my grandmother's mom, my great grandmother, and then I guess he like, yeah, just some weird, ugly history. But but my grandmother, they ended up married, and she's like, I think she was like maybe 16 or 17.
Have you gone to Haiti to check out your roots?
No, no.
Do you want to?
I don't know. I'm good.
You don't want to?
Last time my grandma went to Haiti, she had diarrhea, and she's like, I'm not going again. I'm good. I'm good.
I bet it'd be pretty shocking.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I mean, I don't know. Maybe I'll check it out, though, but I haven't really traveled there. I mean, I've been more focused on comedy, stand-up, and like, I want to create, like, I'm creating projects and stuff. You know, hopefully.
I think getting out is good, you know, doing road shows.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Because New York is, you know, it's pretty debilitating sometimes. You just don't get the reward for the effort.
Right, right. I feel like it's a lot of cynicism and a lot of cynicism, a lot of like patronizing and condescension, especially if you're not in a clique or you're not in a status that they are, or if you're not into in a, it's very caste driven.
Well, the city's so big and vast that it makes you feel like a nobody.
I don't mind that. I just feel like I just want my peace, you know? And I feel like a lot of people in America today are not getting their peace because there's no more middle class.
You mean your peace, P-I-E-C-E, peace?
Yeah, yeah.
Your piece of the action.
Yeah, yeah. I think everyone wants that, right?
Yeah.
Everyone wants to feel like what they're doing is validated and like,
yeah,
they want to be rewarded for what they're doing. They want to be rewarded for their work.
Right.
I feel like a lot of people aren't getting reward for work.
Well, as artists too, it's really hard to get that.
Mm-hmm. You know, what's really sad is like, I feel like with art, I feel like it's become a bad word. Mm. And I feel it's very convenient when like we live in a time where it's all like two or three corporations run everything.
Mm-hmm.
And then being an artist means like you're your own corporation. Like you're starting a business.
You're an entrepreneur.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And I feel like once we demoted the idea of being an artist, it became all of a sudden like, all right, be a consumer. Don't be a creator, be a consumer.
Mm.
And I feel like that's what messed up a lot of things. And that's why we have reboots of Murphy Brown.
That's also gets back to what you said before about playing it safe, I think too.
But who wants to see Murphy Brown again? Like even her shows are, the show was dated. Like you don't see reruns because like they're all dated. Let's bring that back because like no one watched it.
Right, but I've said this before on the podcast and I say this to artist friends, because it's hard to get the gratification from creating anything art, anything creative. Because like if you, all right, so say you're a construction worker, you build a room. Like say we want to build a room.
Right.
We frame it. We put up the insulation and the sheetrock and it's done.
Mm.
And then you could show everyone, look, I built a room. And everyone's like, oh, that's a great room.
Yeah.
And you know it's done. It's a room. You can be like, yes, I did it. But when you create 20 minutes of stand-up, some people like it. Some people don't.
Yeah.
You're like, meh, I could do better.
Yeah, yeah.
Maybe next time it's better.
Yeah.
You don't get that gratification.
I mean, you know, I hate to say this, but with stand-up, you have to be, what do you call it? I think you have to be...
stupid?
Not stupid. Yeah, yeah. I'm trying to... I can't believe
crazy?
I just had a brain fart. You have to be...
narcissistic.
Oh, close. You have to be selfish with it. Yeah. I can't believe I couldn't think of that word.
Well, like, so you mean selfish in the sense of, like, you have to get your own gratification.
You have to do it for yourself, yeah. Right. Like, you have to, I mean, that's why, like, what I've learned was, like, when I used to read, like, Lenny Bruce, like, his, I dig a biography, like, the How to talk dirty and influence people. I think there was a point where he was saying it was either his, that biography that he wrote, or like the big one that was written about him. I think it was by some guy named Goldman. Like, he used to do he had his material, but it was like in his head, A, B, C, D. And sometimes he'd mix it around.
Right.
So to make it fresh and always to kind of keep an improvised way for it.
Yeah.
And I kind of liked that, and I adopted that in a way for my own.
Right. Because you can't phone it in. The audience knows.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's fun just to like hit them with jokes and seeing like, oh, their reaction, that, you know. So it's almost like it's two ways with art. There's always three ways. I feel like it's one, you create it, you have it done, then it's for your audience, and then it's to see like how they react to it, you know?
Right, but the tricky thing is, and I think maybe this is what you're saying with you have to be selfish, is that you can't let the audience give you the gratification.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if you rely on the audience mm-hmm. to feel gratified,
yeah,
you're kind of fucked.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's just it's like a drug, yeah.
Because you never know. You can then you've done a show and the audience didn't respond well, and then you feel horrible.
Right.
You can't let the audience.
I still
have that
do
power.
That too. Yeah, I still have that too. Yeah.
It's really hard, yeah. But you have to be like, oh, well, I tried that new joke. You know, I feel good about the way it's progressing. Mm-hmm. You have to be detached,
right, in a
way. You have to be detached from the audience's response.
Right.
And this is not just comedy, it's music, it's everything.
Film, yeah, like shorts, yeah, yeah. You have to, like, you know. I was always thinking, like, too, like, say you have a TV show, right? Mm-hmm. Would you read, like, the reviews of your shows? Like, say, because, you know, like, TV Club, they have, like, mm-hmm. reviews, and
I probably would, at least for a little while, just to get an idea of what people, mm-hmm. if I can handle it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's one good thing about stand-up, is that it makes you pretty thick-skinned.
Right, right.
Yeah, it's pretty hard to, you know, wreck me at this point.
Yeah. I was thinking maybe I wouldn't, just to, like, not be influenced by the audience, because sometimes they could be like, oh, they should do this, or how come that character's that?
Right.
Well, some creators want to be influenced by the audience, but right. I feel like there needs to be a detachment. So, you know, where, because I don't like when like you could see where the person's going. Mm-hmm. Like sometimes the comic tells a joke, he's like, oh, he's going to go there. Some audiences love it. They're like, yeah, I figured that out. I knew
right.
it.
Oh, good. I was right.
That yeah,
was
yeah.
The predictability.
But I always like the left field where it's just like, oh, mm-hmm. wait, I didn't even see that coming, you know?
Yeah.
Where you're controlling them, you know?
Something happens, you can water stuff down with too much input. Mm-hmm. But Amazon was doing that thing where they would make a pilot. They made a bunch of pilots, mm-hmm. and I think The Tick was one of them.
Yeah.
And they just threw them up on Amazon, and they let the audience decide who would get funded for a season.
Even though they knew who they wanted to, like, pass. You know?
Think?
Well, yeah, I think they said that, too. Like, I think some were just like, all right. And they stopped doing that because they were like, you know what? We're just going to do it ourselves.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Don't let the mass decide what gets a season.
Yeah, I mean, like, I feel like with the... It's two ways because, like, I feel like sometimes people condescend the audience too much. Like, mm-hmm. I feel like the audience is, like, smarter than that because, like, you're an audience member, too. Like, you watch TV, you know? Yeah. We're part of it. You're part of, like, society, you know?
Kind
of. But, yeah, exactly. But also, I feel like I said, I feel like people are not rising and not trusting their audience, you know? I feel like an audience will find you, you know?
Right.
But you need to work extra hard, and you need to put out the cues saying, this is what I am.
Right.
This is what I am.
And that's when it gets exponentially easier, I think.
Yeah, yeah.
Once your audience finds you, they're coming to see Todd Montesi.
Yeah.
They already like what you do.
Yeah.
You have, like, that freedom to riff, to explore.
Right. That's the one that's really fun, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But when you're just going up in front of, like, that's the funny thing, too. Like, when I did a stand-up for NBC thing, that, like, I went online, did 8 hours, and then, like...
You stood online for 8 hours?
Yeah, more than that. Probably, like, overnight. And, But when they brought me up, so it's Todd Montesi, right?
Yeah.
Or Montesi.
Yeah.
I have shitty handwriting. Uh-huh. They brought me up as Ted Medusa.
Oh, no.
And that threw me off. Like, what? And yeah. Right. And I just like had like, I think the first 5 seconds I was like off for 10 seconds. Because you had to do a minute of comedy.
You get 1 minute
one
of
minute. Yeah, yeah. And I did okay at the end, but I was just like, the first 10 seconds I was just like trying to establish myself. And it was just like, you know.
Because if they bring you up as Ted Medusa, that's kind of something you have to respond to.
I could. I didn't. I wanted to, but right. I didn't. Yeah.
Who's named Medusa?
I wanted to. This is what I would do in a real set.
Right.
I'm like, oh, great. Ted Medusa.
Yeah.
Medusa. But I couldn't do that.
Right.
Right?
So, yeah, they kind of screwed you right there.
Yeah, whatever. I've always been screwed. Just another... Thanks a lot, God.
So, religious parents?
Huh? Oh, yeah. My grandmother's super religious. Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But is it a religion where they believe in voodoo and
no,
stuff?
No, she's a Roman Catholic. Mm-hmm. Yeah, of course, because she's Haitian, so everyone thinks like, voodoo. Well, voodoo actually, it's actually there's more Haitians into Roman Catholicism. It's very
really,
yeah. I mean, technically Haitians are a Latin. It's a Latin. It's Afro Latino technically because they have the French Creole, and the mentality and stuff, and like even you know. But I think from what I've gathered, voodoo is more like. Or the superstitions that, I mean, there's still a lot of superstitions with Roman Catholicism. Okay.
Yeah.
But like I think the voodoo thing is overplayed and like, I haven't, you know, I don't think I've ever met, I've lived in a Haitian building mostly. And like, I haven't met one person who's like in a voodoo, you know, but I feel like if I heard about it, so according to my grandma, it's like the lower caste people would be into that.
Oh, is it?
Yeah. Cause there's always caste in every, like, you know.
So did you go to church growing up?
My grandma did make me go like when I was earlier as a kid, but then I dropped out after I did my communion and I dropped out.
Yeah.
After I got my wine, I was like, I'm good.
But were you in it long enough to mess you up? Or you
I'm still messed up by it. I know, like, you know, I actually find Catholicism's very like interesting, like the whole Gothic nature of it.
The myth of it?
Yeah. I'm always into like mythologies and stuff. Like I've always been, but, I even to this day, like my grandma's, especially after her son died, because he died like at a, I guess like 45, I don't know, some age like that.
Mm, how did he die?
I don't know. I didn't really ask, but I think he like, it was weird. Cause like my grandma came up to me and she was like, can you check on him and wake up? And you know, and
I think, so you found his body.
Yeah.
So, you gotta tell me the story. What happened? She came to you and said, he's not responding.
On him? Yeah. And then I saw, and it was just like, he was moving and stuff.
So you walked into his room?
Yeah.
And you just saw him lying there?
Basically, yeah. Eyes open and stuff. And then, yeah.
How old were you?
I don't know, like 37 now. It might have been like, maybe 25, 27. It's like 10 years ago, maybe. It was pretty, I'd say recent. It's not recent, but it's pretty recent.
I bet it feels pretty recent.
Yeah. It was like, yeah.
So you put your arm on him to wake him?
I try to. I mean, like, we were not in talking terms, though, because, like, he would, you know, it was just, like, it was too much. I kind of cut him off. Even though I lived with him, I kind of cut him off mentally.
Uh-huh.
You know, because it was just too, you know.
Was he abusive?
Yeah, I mean, he was just, like, a fuck-up, you know? He stole my money. He'd also, like, as a kid, he'd beat me up.
He did?
You know? Yeah. So, you know, it was just, like, you know, at the point, I just need to shut him off. Cause I can't, like, you know, I'm just trying to get out of this fucking hood and all that stuff. I remember one time too, when, he'd have like drug dealers calling up about like, cause he owed them money, and they'd be like, one of them was just like, yeah. So, do you know where he's at? Cause he owes money. And I'm like, I don't know. And he's like, and then the guy basically said that, I'm like, I think I was like, what do you want money for? What was it? He's like, don't you know he's a crackhead?
He said that.
Yeah. Yes, he's a crackhead.
Did he die from like a heart attack?
I don't know. I'm presuming, though, because he'd like, you know, yeah. And the sad part, too, is like, and that's kind of messing me up, too, because he was like a writer, but he was a schizophrenic. So it was like mostly ramblings, but he wanted to be like a writer.
Yeah.
And part of me is scared of writing because like, I'm like, is this ramblings from a schizophrenic with me doing stand up? Am I just like wasting my time? Am I just fucking crazy?
Right. Well, you think that because we're told we're controlled by genetics so much.
Right. And I feel like, I mean, as part of it's like, you know, fate versus, you know, destiny and or whatever. And like wanting to do your own thing. And
you want to watch out for a self-fulfilling prophecy kind of thing.
Well, I mean, like, I feel I feel like I've had so much fucked up shit in my life. I feel like maybe I'm here for something bigger, but maybe I'm lying to myself just to keep myself going and surviving, you know?
Well, I think if you do it for other people, because there's plenty of people going through fucked up shit. Mm-hmm. So if you turn that fucked up shit into something good, you're
be a public speaker and be like, hey guys, you too cannot be, you know.
Even just making a joke out of it, someone will be like, oh, wow, he made light of that. Like, there is hope.
Yeah, we'll see. Yeah, I mean, you know.
So not only did you make people laugh, but whoever heard that can relate to your experiences.
Yeah. Maybe they'll listen to this podcast and be like, wow.
Maybe I should be a motivational speaker.
Exactly, right.
You start doing that. Well, you got a lot of training for it already.
Yeah, exactly right. I don't know, man. I feel like those guys are bullshit mostly, but I would like to make fun of that.
Yeah.
You know? So if I did do that, I would make fun of that in my own way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That could be funny.
Yeah.
That could be a character.
Actually, I was thinking like maybe as I develop as a stand-up or something, like, you know, like once I move forward.
Yeah.
You know, like not just do it, you know, because I really do want to do like Carlin-esque material, but also like with in my own sense, in my
Sacha
own way.
Sacha Baron Cohen-esque?
No, mm-hmm. Carlin.
Oh, Carlin. Uh-huh.
Yeah, George Carlin, yeah. Yeah. He's a big influence, yeah. I want to definitely do like in my own crazy way, like even do like, because you know, you have like the Kanye West type people who are just like, man, you gotta change the world within yourself, and then you change the world outside. I would love to just make do that too, but in a way where
you do have the voice for it.
Yeah. We'll see though. Mm-hmm. But I mean, you're not gonna be a motivational speaker if you still live at home at 37.
And no one needs to know that.
Exactly.
So is that the house you're living in? The house?
There's no house. It's an apartment. Yeah.
The apartment that you grew up in.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so, yeah, it's yeah. And if I yeah, it's all messed up. I have another aunt, younger aunt, is going through a divorce, mm-hmm. and she moved in, which mm-hmm. is funny. So.
How many apartments are there?
There's only one.
I mean, how many bedrooms?
I don't know, two. I sleep in a weird. I don't really hang out there that much. I do my work and then like leave.
Yeah.
But I sleep in like a cot, not even a cot, like a. In the side of a living room and something like that. I don't really have a room, yeah.
It's just like sectioned off with a barricade or something.
Not even,
like that.
Yeah. Just like, you know, it's just like, all right, this is a place I put my head on and, you know, kind of a couch thing. Yeah, it's really sad. Yeah.
Well, I think it must be hard to be an adult living in the place you grew up in.
Well, you know, the thing is, it's like, because I'd always get like ashamed because, you know, it is sucky, but like, I pursued this dream of stand-up and mm-hmm. it's just like, to pursue it, you can't just like, you know, be also, I'm so fucked up. Like I didn't really have like parents to like help me out, you know, like I had a grandmother, but you know, grandparents are kind of like half retired mm-hmm. when they raise you.
Right.
You know? So it's just like, oh, well I'm getting old too. And like, you know, I have other, you know,
well, they're going through their stuff
too. Yeah. 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 Old. And also dealing with a schizophrenic crackhead. And then you're just like, well, why would I play by the rules of society when I've had this shit? Mm-hmm. I mean, it makes no sense. Like I can't do a traditional 9-to-5 after doing that, you know, like, yeah. I'm just like, I'm not going to add to society that way. Mm-hmm. I'm here just to be a fucking drone after all this shit. Getting slapped by a woman who called me my mom and then leaving after a couple. Yeah. Yeah. Like I'm so screwed up. Uh-huh. It's like, oh, most people would kill themselves. I'm still here and I'm doing stand up. So like I'm technically winning in my own fucked up way. Like I had a shitty hand of cards.
Yeah.
And I'm basically trying to do my best with this. Like I'm doing your podcast. This is probably the best outcome if you think about it of what I had, you know? Cause most people would probably be in jail or be dead or whatever. And I'm just like, oh, I'm just doing a podcast in this guy's apartment.
But the fact that you know this and the fact that you're saying that I'm screwed up kind of shows that you're not.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, because like, you control. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Well, it's like an alcoholic being like, oh, yeah, I'm an alcoholic. And you're like, oh, well, you know you're an alcoholic. Sounds like you have control of something.
Yeah. I can't go over, like, I do drink a lot. Mm-hmm. I'm a binge drinker. Like, if I drink, I'm just like, I'll bend her till the morning.
But you're a happy drunk.
Yeah.
Yeah, you said that earlier. You're a happy drunk. And that is a big reveal.
Mm-hmm.
That's not a lot of anger inside of you.
Mm-hmm.
Because if there was, it would be a mess when you got drunk.
Yeah. People like me when I'm, people like, it, I know like people like in the East Village, I'm well liked in all the bars. Uh-huh. In the East Village, I'm passing all the bars.
Yeah.
They all like me. When you come to a bar and go, oh, get out of here.
They bump the drunk off the stool and say, come on.
Exactly. Yeah. It's got to the point where like, oh, I'm not taking a break, but I still hang out at the bars. They're like, oh, okay. Are you okay?
Yeah.
You find Jesus or something?
Another
water? I'm just taking a break. I'll be back, guys. God.
So it sounds like you try to stay out of the apartment where you live.
Mostly, yeah. I mean, I like to, yeah. I mean, like, I'm, again, like, I'm trying to do stuff. I'm, you know, it's still hard. It's still mm-hmm. hard to break. It's a hard industry, you know?
Oh, yeah.
But, you know, I the neighbors know who I am and stuff. I say hello and stuff, but I don't really tell them I'm a comic, you know? Well, I should, but.
Being in it for 20 years, have you seen ebbs and flows? I mean, it seems like. There's so many comedians right now.
Oh, yeah. There's always been. You know what? I'll be honest. When I started doing stand-up in 1998, it was already dead comedy. Like, once...
It's oversaturated.
Yeah. I mean, once 1990... I'd say the 90s hit, like 92, 93, it was already, from what I've, it seems to me, it was already like, once it starts going like Def Jam and like the alt comedy scene and then like the Seinfeld scene,
right,
where it was bifurcated into like different scenes instead of being like a one universal scene, that's when stand-up became oversaturated. And like, I mean, it was great to have like Def Jam and Kung Fu and like even a Seinfeld alt humor, alt, the alt scene.
Right.
But again, that was the beginning of probably the oversaturated end, and when people go, okay, I'm going to be this comic, I'm going to be that comic, instead of being like, all right, I'm just going to be
funny,
the comic of myself. Yeah. Right. I'm just going to be true to myself. Right. You know, and you see that a lot now. Like it's kind of funny seeing like certain comics, you go, hey, can I book you at my show? And then they don't respond, but they'll book themselves at like the elite shows to be seen at, you know, and you go, oh, okay, I see what you're doing.
Right.
And you know what? That's smarter than what I'm doing, I guess, you know, because I was a born Brooklyn asshole and, you know, I want to, you know.
But comedy's kind of an equalizer in that way, where you have someone as successful as Mark Norman, he'll do your crappy free bar show just to get stage time, just to work on the jokes. Because it is one of the few art forms where you have to work on it in public.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, for your ego. Yeah. You want to be the best, you know, especially if you decide to like commit yourself to this, you want to be the best you can, and you want to be the best. When I do it, I want to be the best comic where like, oh, I want to see me.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Like the comic you go, wow, I enjoy my comedy.
You're doing what you want to see.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
That's what, again, too, that's what I do. Like I wouldn't pursue stand up still all these years if I was just like generic and like, if I sounded like someone else or if I did, you know,
right.
Like I feel like I have a brand of humor out there that's different and that people like.
Right. It's like that Gandhi quote, be the comic you want to see in the world.
Exactly. Right. Right.
I'm not even sure if that's Gandhi actually.
Close. Yeah. Close enough.
Yeah. So do you want to, like what, I know you want to keep creating and stuff, but.
I am. It's tiring though. It's just, we have no money. So, but I'm still creating stuff. Yeah.
What would you say are some of the big changes you've seen in yourself creatively doing it for 20 years?
You know what? I've accepted that I'm a really good producer because I've produced a stand-up comedy show for 20 years and dealing with all these like personalities and all these egos and all these like neuroses.
Yeah.
It's amazing that almost every week, and also management, different venues, every Tuesday, except for like maybe two or three a year because of Christmas or because of like a huge storm. They're not even a real storm. You got to be like a blizzard to cancel us.
Right.
And it's just like for 10 years and it's just like amazing, you know? And like, that's helped me, given me confidence to produce like shorts that I've had in festivals, comedic shorts.
Right.
And pilots and stuff that I've created and projects. And like, for example, recently I completed a late night talk show pilot and sizzle down pitching. It's called Who's Todd Mondesi. I'll probably change the name because like, you have Who's America by Sacha Baron Cohen.
Right.
Yeah, whatever. And like the idea of the show is like, it's a late night talk show where this guy, me, is trying to become famous by the end of each episode in Lifetime because it's like a multimedia and stuff. So for example, one episode would be like, we'll try to get a hit song in 30 minutes or less. Try to create from like scratch.
Yeah.
Like we go on Craigslist, recruit people. We interview like a music producer, who's like a hit maker.
Yeah.
And then like, if it's 25 minutes left, all right, we got to do the song. And then we try to make it like viral and stuff.
That's cool.
And then like the next week, we'll just make a music video out of it and stuff. Like I want to do like, it's so annoying because people always complain how like television's like stayed, you know, or like late night. Like it's very like, because they just canceled the Michelle Wolf show.
Yeah.
And the, who's that guy from Community?
Joel McHale.
Yeah, they canceled his show as well.
Yeah.
But they're not bringing anything new to the table with their
shows.
That's
why it got canceled.
Yeah, yeah. And I'm like, hey, this is something new and different. Mm-hmm. Why don't you check that out? You know?
Right.
And also I have Bob Bell. You know Bob Bell, right?
No, I don't.
He's like this, he does like Jeff Cole's shows a lot. He's this like old math teacher.
Oh, yeah, yeah,
stand up.
Yeah,
yeah. Yeah. Yeah, he was at the show last week. Yeah,
He looks like a character. He's got dreads.
He's like this old. He's like he looks like he might be a Scorsese guy.
Right.
But he's just like this. He's like a beatnik. Like
if Scorsese took way too much acid.
Exactly right. He's like this cynical but lovable guy. Right. He's like a stand-up comic. He's like my my sidekick. It's kind of hilarious because he's always just like, you know, like I'm trying to get famous and he's just like, oh, great.
He's your sidekick in the show.
Yeah, yeah. It's great. It's great. It's great. So I'm still trying to sell that out there. I've got like some interest, but we'll see, you know, but I definitely like to. Oh, and also too, I've got a couple of like TV shows I'm working on trying to pitch and stuff. Like I don't have a agent or manager and stuff, you know.
What happened to the manager that you had one?
He was horrible, and I found, and he didn't do anything. Like you think with HBO, you think he'd push more,
right?
To for other stuff, but he was like a lazy piece of crap.
Yeah.
So I dropped him, and I found someone else. And the funny thing is, when I dropped him, he called like because I dropped him from Actors Access.
Yeah.
He calls up and goes, "Hey, Todd. So I got this role where you could play like a DJ in this TV show. Yeah, yeah. So I go, oh yeah. So I said you, and I'm like, yeah, go ahead. He goes, okay, cool. By the way, I saw you drop me on Actors Access. That was a mistake, right? I'm like, I don't know. Was it? I mean,
oh, he's got you there.
Yeah. So I go, you know what? Why don't you send me a thing, and then I'll, you know, maybe, you know, like, all right. He never did. And I'm like, yeah.
So he was messing with you.
Oh, no, yeah, yeah. And then the funny part was, like, I had this other person, and she was cool, but she sent me out to these auditions for, like stuff like CBS stuff, where I'm just like, oh, the guy who's just said, you know, the messenger guy.
Yeah.
Like, these one-line stuff.
Mm-hmm.
When I kind of
paid work.
Yeah, 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 yeah. But I didn't book any of those. It was, like, for, like, maybe 2 months.
Right.
And then she sent me a letter, and she was like, yeah, I don't know if it's going to work out. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, it's only been 2 months. And I was trying to picture this idea thing. But but
how did you get her as your agent?
Think I hustled through because I have IMDb. And then like I saw, and I was sending out like stuff.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, like packages. But
there you go.
But I honestly, like, I think she was kind of condescending too. Because like, for example, she was like, oh, you're not taking UCB classes and all that stuff. And I'm like, why would I take UCB classes when I know those guys from 20 years ago?
Right.
And like, cause I did like, I did the extra work on a UCB show when I was on Comedy Central when I was like younger.
Wait, what is, you're on Comedy Central?
No, the UCB show, they had a show on Comedy Central. Like,
yeah, sketch show.
Yeah, yeah. And I did some extra work on it, you know, so I didn't know. And I used to hang out there and do the bogus thing, which is like a secret open mic where you'd have like Andy Richter show up or like Conan people.
Right.
Yeah.
So you tell the agent, I'm kind of past that.
Like, I didn't say that. I just let it go. I was just like, you know what? You don't believe in me. I'll just find something else.
Right.
I'd rather just build up my own stuff, you know? Yeah. Like, I got a smart cousin. I'll just have him as my manager if I break through, you know? Yeah. Yeah, yeah. Like, my cousin came to my show last night with his wife. His Asian wife was cool. She's hilarious.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, yeah. And I'm like, she's taking pictures of the shows. And I'm like,
she didn't try and rob you?
No. She's one of the good ones.
So this cousin is this...
my younger cousin, yeah.
Haitian side?
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. Haitian, half Spaniard, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
He's really smart. And, yeah, he's cool.
So there's the smart genes.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I think we're, it's a smart family. I just think they're just neurotic and fucked up, and they don't like.
You used a word before that I meant to ask you, Billabong or something like that.
What?
It's in this podcast. You used it. And I was like, oh, I got to ask what that word was.
Well, what was it like?
You said a word. It went right over my head. I was like, ooh, he is smart.
For a black.
For a Haitian.
Exactly. For a Haitian. Yeah. But, so, yeah.
Yeah. You get tired of New York? I mean,
you know, the thing is, I want to tell New York City stories.
Yeah.
I mean, I had a friend who was joking, who was like, oh, it's my writing partner who, I'll give him a shout out. Nick Albano.
Mm-hmm.
I started out with him doing stand up. He's a brilliant comic, but he doesn't do stand up. He's like my Larry David.
Yeah.
You know, where he's just like he's great puncher stuff. He's like great scripts and stuff. He's stuck in Staten Island right now, you know, but, he wants to, but he's still doing comedy with, you know, helping me out and stuff. And like, he's brilliant, but he was joking. He's just like, cause I talked to him almost like once a week, just like about comedy and like, you know, just scripts and stuff and ideas.
Mm-hmm. Keep you on track.
Yeah. Yeah. But just like, even like scripts, like, cause we're always reading each other. We're always like giving us honest feedback and like, you know, like we don't hold, he's almost like my comedy brother, my comedy sibling, you know,
right,
in a weird way. But, and I'm sure you'll hear about him. Like if I do, like, When we get our projects out there, he's gonna be a big name, you know, whether he likes it or not. He's like Charlie Kaufman.
Yeah,
yeah, he's totally Charlie Kaufman. Nice. He's like, he's like, is this a real person or like, is he
crazy
know?
But genius?
Yeah, yeah, totally, yeah, but he's joking. He's like saying, He was saying like, oh man, maybe you should have went to LA after you got crashing, like immediately, because you'd probably get more opportunities.
Right.
And I was like, now you tell me.
You should have just followed Pete Holmes home.
Exactly.
So you were talking earlier about kind of harvesting your life story mm-hmm. and making it into some sort of.
Yeah, it's interesting. Yeah, like yeah.
You thinking into a sketch, into a stand-up?
No, I have two projects like mm-hmm. in mind. So like the one project I have is called PN, which is this black nerd who's like a wrestling fan, mm-hmm. and he lives with his uncle Groper, who's like a gangster rapper, lives in a bathroom. His grandma and Matt Nagin, you know Matt Nagin, right?
Yeah, yeah.
He's his wacky next door neighbor.
Uh-huh.
And I made that a short of that like 10. I think maybe. Like 10 years ago, maybe, like it got in a couple festivals,
mm-hmm.
but like, I've always wanted to like make it as a show, TV show, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And like, it's not, it's outwardly based on like, it's just a cartoon. It's a live act. It's basically Always Sunny meets Good Times, you know?
Yeah.
But it has the whole idea of like identity I want to talk about, you know what I'm saying? Cause mm-hmm. like he wants to be he's always down on his luck comically, like a Charlie Brown.
Right.
But he wants to be more than that. He wants to be like Hulk Hogan, like a hero.
You know?
So I definitely want to play with that. And then the other project that will probably come later is like my version of crashing.
Yeah.
I actually pitched an episode, sent to Pete, but he never like responded.
He didn't respond.
Yeah. It was based on like an experience I had.
Mm-hmm.
You want me to tell it?
Yeah.
If I did shoot it, like, well, who cares? You'll see it if you. So I used to run the Village Lantern. For like Mondays.
Comedy scene there.
Yeah. That's another thing, another room. Yeah, so the Grizzly Pear, that's me.
Mm-hmm.
So all you thousands of comics, you're welcome. And the Village Lantern before, like when he got kicked out because he was running to Boston at the same time.
Right.
So he's running Boston Comedy Club and the Village Lantern within blocks of each other. I don't know if you want to, what do you call it? You might want to like bleep his name.
Okay.
Because you don't want to sue or anything, because I don't like him.
Okay.
For obvious reasons.
Well, I didn't say it. You did.
Yeah. But you bleep his name. Yeah. You can bleep
it. You want
it.
Me to?
Probably. Better off.
Okay.
Yeah. I don't want to give him...
the notoriety?
Yeah.
Okay.
I don't even... So can you bleep that?
Yeah.
Good. All right. So that's the only thing.
Gotcha.
So basically he was running like... he got kicked out the Lantern because he was running two comedy venues within like a block of each other,
mm-hmm.
which is like obviously a conflict of interest.
Mm-hmm.
And like... it's so funny. So him and his girlfriend tried to sabotage me.
How'd they do that?
So, because they were like putting a kibosh and blanding people from doing that club to do their club.
Oh, right.
So and also they were putting up barkers up front in front of the club to block people from going into the venue.
Right. Tell them, go there.
Yeah, exactly. Which is like fucked up, right?
Yeah, bad business.
So I went up to him and I was like, hey man, I have no problems with you. Can you just do me a favor and just not have your barkers in front of my shows?
Yeah.
Because like, I'm not into like conflict. I just want to do stand up. That's it. You know? He was like, well, whatever, fine, whatever. So his girlfriend the next day comes over, she barks, and I go, what are you doing? I just talked to the other day. And she's like, I'll do whatever the fuck I want.
Mm-hmm.
Cause she was a nut. And she was like, I don't know if she does comedy anymore. I'm not going to say her name cause she's a horrible person who has sabotaged her opportunities. Like she was opening for Lisa Lampanelli.
Yeah.
She sabotaged it.
Mm.
So you could put two and two together. So I was like, you can't do that. She comes up to me, spits in my face. I push her away.
Little spit.
Yeah.
Wow.
And then I push her away. She goes, oh, you hit me. And then the barker, another kid who's listening to comedy, goes, yep, you hit him. You hit her. And they call the cops on me.
Wow.
Yeah. And then it got weird. The owner comes out of the Lantern and goes, all right, this is weird. No show tonight. This is like, I don't know what's going on.
Right.
So me and my friend, we leave. A cop car comes rushing down like the street in West Village.
Yeah.
Stops me and goes, hey, is that the guy? And she jumps out.
Of the cop car.
Yeah. And then she goes, yeah, that's him, man. By the way, they're both coked up. They were in a really coked up, fucked up Sid and Nancy relationship they thought of themselves as.
Mr. Bleep and his girlfriend.
Yeah. I know Mr. Bleep is clean now. And I'll tell you a follow story after that. But so she comes out. She goes, yeah, that's him. And the officer's like, this pasty white guy's like pissed off. Like, you know, he's like, did you hit her?
Yeah.
And I was like,
white girl?
Yeah.
On your
of course, yeah. So, but I was calm. She was not. And I was just like, sir, I did not spit on her. I mean, I did not hit her.
Right.
I pushed her after she spat on me.
Right.
And he goes, wait one second. Did you spit on him? She goes, yeah, so?
Ooh.
And then the cop goes, you know, you guys are both comedians. Why can't you just, you know, get along and just tell jokes? I don't get it.
You're like, you don't know comedy.
Exactly. See, that's the type of shit I want to show. Like, right. In my show, I would show that.
Yeah.
Because it's just like, yeah, it's just like, you could almost die. Someone's trying to call a cop to kill you, which is already problematic.
Right.
And then all of a sudden, the cop's like, you guys are comedians. I don't get it. Tell jokes.
That's already written. There
yeah,
you go.
Yeah, yeah. So I've got tons of that. But yeah, that really, and I'll never forgive that guy for that and her either. Because that could have been ugly.
Yeah.
And yeah, and recently that piece of shit came up to me. Because I was at the club he, I think, manages or whatever. And he goes, hey, man, I know we've had some differences, but let's just call it a day. And I was like...
He extended his hand, huh?
Yeah, but I was like, eh, okay. Because after that, they kind of bullied me back in the days where, like, I'd go to comedy shows, Christmas parties.
Yeah.
And then they'd be, like, being assholes and be like, oh, this guy, huh? And then they'd try to step up to me and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So... I feel like they sabotage me in a way, and like, and it's so funny too, because you think like, you know, comics knew that there were comics positions that knew that, and they didn't really. But yeah, that's okay. All comics are for themselves.
Yeah,
but it's kind of funny seeing how like comics now are like going up to their with each other and team up with each other in like ways where they're trying to like, you know, like causes and stuff, and like, oh, this guy is a pariah, that guy's a pariah. I've had these things, and like, I didn't have anyone have my back.
But this is like 10 years ago.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So you didn't want to just like let it go and be like, ah.
Maybe 15 years ago. But
so you're in your 20s, you know, people do stupid
stuff. Yeah, but you know what, man? I've had so much fucked up shit in my life. Mm-hmm. It's just like, I didn't need that.
Right.
I do comedy to get out of that situation.
Right.
And then a piece of shit like that. And also, he was a fucking drug addict, and I've had enough fuck ups with drug addicts.
Did you recognize that? Can you pick out a crackhead or a cokehead?
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. I mean, some of them are my best friends because you could tell, like, they remind me of, like, these things in my life.
They feel like home?
Yeah, exactly. That's another problem, too. Like, some women, you're just like, oh, God, this is way too similar to, like, my neurotic, the neurotic women I grew up with who are, like, you know, self-absorbed.
Yeah, well, that's a good reason to not forget where you come from, just to know what to watch out for.
Yeah, yeah. Sometimes you want to go for it, but you're like, ugh. Sometimes like your heart's like, go for it, but your mind's like, don't yet.
Yeah.
You can't afford to like go down that.
Yeah. Well, you've got a great story. I would very much look forward to seeing that.
Hopefully we'll see, you know, or I'll be dead and then they'll just adopt it and make it really corny and cheesy.
And then the next person will find your body.
Yeah, exactly.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Starring Kevin Hart as Todd Mossy. Wow. There's tap dancing in there. What?
It's updated for now.
Exactly. It is funny too, like, because I remember when all these people started, like Kevin Hart, Amy Schumer, Hannibal. Mm-hmm. It's always funny. And like even Mark Norman. Yeah, it's funny seeing all these people started and like, you know, they found their way, which is good, you know.
You saw them when they were rough, they didn't know who they were.
Yeah. But it's good to see, like, you know, it's good that they found their way, but like I feel like I know where my way is. And you know what? Thank you for like, I think this is the first podcast. I don't believe in therapy. I still am that asshole. But I'm sure this is a therapeutic thing.
Yeah.
You know, in a
for
way.
For you to talk about it.
Yeah, yeah. But at least in my own way, I feel like, and you know what? I started being open with like the familial stuff because of Nick Albano. Cause like we we talk about writing stuff, and then we explore, you know, and then like I'd share it with him and he'd be like, you know, he's a funny guy who like helped me like kind of guide that, you know? So
well, I think it's like kind of like what I was saying before, how you can make it like, if you turn your trauma and your pain into something pleasurable, some good art, it's not self-indulgent if people enjoy it.
Right.
And, but also if they don't enjoy it, you feel good because you've created something good for yourself.
You just get it out of your system like shit. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And you're not relying on the audience to make it feel good for you.
Yeah. I mean, in a way you want to like, it's again, it comes back to control where it's just like, all right, this bad thing happens to me. How to take that and make it something positive for me, you know?
Yeah. But you also have to make yourself vulnerable to make good art sometimes.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you know, I think that's another thing too. Like, I'm learning to get vulnerable, even though I don't want to get too vulnerable, you know, but I'm, you know,
why, what happens if you get too vulnerable?
Cause people take advantage of you and then people like fucking like, you know, take it down. Like it's still like, you know,
is there a way to be vulnerable where people can't take advantage of you?
Be detached. I'm very detached. Like I feel like
if you're detached, can you be vulnerable?
In a way where you show that side and then like the other side, they'll never get to.
I could buy that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I buy that.
Yeah. Yeah, but I definitely feel like I'm that type of person where like people think, oh yeah, Todd, yeah, but there's still a mystery about me, and I'm okay with that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But in a way, as a stand-up, you want to be very clear about who you are.
But also, you also want to be something where like people want to keep coming back.
Right.
You got to leave them for more.
I mean,
wanting more.
You obviously have the likability factor.
We'll see, man. I mean, I'm not an NBC doesn't think so for now. I don't
know. Well, they think you're Medusa.
Exactly. Ted Kaczynski?
Yeah. They gave you the lower hand coming in.
That's okay. That'll be part of the story, too.
Exactly.
Yeah. I was like, you know what? Thanks. You gave me, like, more material for that show. That my version of, like, crashing.
Yeah.
Or I don't think it would be crashing. And more it would be, like, trying to rise or something.
I don't know. Which is what?
No.
I do look forward to seeing your life story on screen.
And somehow, like you know what? I always feel like with my comedy, I put something in, a piece of me in there.
Mm-hmm.
So even like, you know, even with some joke, it's like there's a piece of me in there.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
Mm-hmm.
So with everything, man, like everything, like that's real good comedy, real good art.
Where
you put a piece of yourself in there,
yeah,
and then it's for them. It's not yours anymore. That's the most saddest thing.
Well, and it's also the easiest way to make yourself stand out and be unique,
because
no one has your exact life story from your perspective.
Well, I hope not. That would suck. We're like, wait, you too? Dude!
Suck for them.
Oh, yeah.
But they, I guess, when you get in touch with your half-sister, you
might. Oh, yeah. That's why I can't wait to be famous. Like, oh, yeah, remember me? Yeah, great. Oh, great.
Eat so your half-sister is the Puerto Rican side.
Yeah, I don't know where she's at. Yeah, that'd be interesting to find
out. Maybe it's the exact same life that you had, but with a Puerto Rican bend to it.
I don't know. You know, I did know her a little bit, but then, like, I guess it splintered. But she's, I think, maybe 2 or 3 years older than me.
Mm-hmm.
And I know she had a kid last time. The funny thing was, she was trying to connect with my family. Yeah. And then, like, my grandma was like, all right, maybe we shouldn't, because, like, they're probably going to need money or something.
Right. They're all wary of that.
We have enough bastards here. But it's funny, though. But yeah. It's kind of like, yeah. You know, yeah, in a weird way, I think, because I knew her as a kid. Not a kid, but, like, as an other, you know, like, oh, yeah, you have a half-sister.
Yeah.
I think I had almost, like, a crush on her.
Because,
like, oh, wow, I have a half-sister and stuff. But not incest, but you know what I mean. It's like, oh, wow, someone else, like, you know?
Yeah.
But, like, yeah. But I think last time I met her, I think it was, like, maybe, like, what, 19 or something.
But that could be good, you know, if you don't want to do it for personal reasons, you could do it for creative reasons, even.
Well, I'm just curious, you know, and also street cred, you know.
Get that Puerto Rican thing down? Is that what you
mean? Yeah, well, I know. Like, yeah, exactly. It's like, yeah, because now it's like, oh, yeah, he's even got the Puerto Ricans at it with him. There you go. So, yeah, well, I'm totally like...
Let's cast him. He's knocking off all these columns.
Exactly. He's got an Asian cousin's wife and... Yeah, wow.
Yeah, diversity with one person.
Yeah, cast yeah. They always say they want diversity until there's, you know... They don't want economic diversity. They want, like, the same ass rich kids.
Right.
Just brown.
Mm-hmm.
Or, like, yeah, crazy rich Asians. Okay.
Uh-huh.
That's what you want. You don't want, like, the story of this kid, this Asian kid in Flushing who's, like, striving and, like, trying to do his best and, like, you know, and has to deal with like a neighborhood full of gangs and stuff. Mm. And just, you know, they don't want to tell you those stories.
Yeah.
There's so many stories out there and so many different ways you can tell a story. And then you just go on and just watch these things. It's like the same formula, the same format. And then you just want to go there with a little different tweak. Mm-hmm. And then you go, yeah, but it's too different. And it's just like, what the hell do you know? You're just a rich kid.
Right.
That got in your position because you're a rich kid. You got lucky. And then you think like, oh, I think I know what's going on. No, you don't. And that's why no one's into that.
Right. Well, that's the great thing about nowadays is that we can create our own content.
Mm-hmm.
As long as we get it out there.
Yeah, just find your audience and put in a void. But, you know, mm-hmm. that's easier said than done.
It sure is, because they got the mass marketing.
Yeah, they got, yeah. Like, you know, you can't do Google ads. You got to have lots of money to do that. Mm-hmm. So they got it.
The machine still exists.
Well, you know what? The good thing is, though, the machine's collapsing. Like, mm-hmm. you know, you could just tell, like, even with the presidency, it's just like, it's become a farce.
Right.
And you know what? Sooner or later, all societies collapse, and like the strong will survive. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I'm good. I don't need therapy once the apocalypse hits. I could deal with it myself.
Well, you might be better equipped for the apocalypse.
Yeah, exactly. Good luck finding your depressing Zoloft pills once shit hits the fan, guys.
Nice. So what's next for you?
I'm working on the PN project. So basically I'm setting up an Instagram page for it and doing like 1 minute videos.
Cool.
Like basically what I'm setting up is like shooting a bunch of videos and then like 1 minute little skits a day.
Mm-hmm.
And then like once it gets popular.
What's that called?
PN.
PN.
Yeah. PN is the character's name. Yeah.
Oh, okay, cool.
Yeah.
Where do people find that?
Right now, you could find online. Just follow me on, you know, just follow me on Facebook or Twitter.
Cool.
Montikilla. Montikilla.
Mm-hmm.
Montikilla Vision. Montikilla. Yeah, just find me. Todd Mondesi. Just look up Todd Mondesi. You'll find me.
Find them.
Yeah, yeah.
Links are in the show notes.
TODDMONTESI. You can see me on the first episode of Crashing. Maybe send them letters. Be like, yeah, put them in more episodes.
Yeah.
No, they're done.
Call back.
Season 3. Right.
Thanks a lot for talking, man.
I hope this was interesting. I hope people enjoyed.
I did.
Okay. And that's what matters. Being selfish. The end.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.